So, Jordan, you've spent about a year studying a certificate in disability support. Is that right?
Disability support, and they have lumped it in with aged care, which is kind of interesting because, like, anecdotally, pretty much everyone that's doing it is just doing it to become a disability support worker. No one really wants to do aged care, but it makes the course a lot longer and take up a lot more time with a lot of just unnecessary stuff that no one cares about.
And why does no one want to do aged care? Is that because the wages are lower, the conditions are worse?
I think it's just the government's just giving money out hand over fist for NDIS providers. And whether or not the people that are doing the course are well-intended or not is another story, but it's just a matter of incentives. Like, you get what you incentivize, basically.
Yeah. I'm curious, Jordan, you said something earlier. You think most people aren't that interested in the NDIS, in disability support and aged care as to how it's done. You say maybe you think people say that they care about it, but they're not really that invested in it. What do you think?
In terms of the general public who have nothing to do with it, I think that everyone has the moral structure where they think that you should be helping people that need help, basically, and everyone wants to be able to say that they're doing that. So it's a very sensitive political issue, and because of all of the incentivization and rewarding that's going on, basically. Yeah. You just end up with a topic that no one wants to really, like, go over and make the necessary changes so that it's not just a massive fraud and waste centre, which ultimately, end of the day, if it's not addressed, is going to lead to the people who legitimately do need support not receiving any.
Mm.
Because as the waste builds up, and there's just so many stories of people that are just totally exploiting the system, both in terms of people that are receiving NDIS payments for work and people who aren't actually in need of support, getting it for the financial assistance that they can get out of it.
I've seen some of that firsthand, or at least one side of it. A couple of years ago, when I was doing a little bit of acting, I did some promotional stuff for an outfit I can't remember, but it was a startup NDIS provider, and I don't know the credentials of the provider, but the crew I was working with to record the advertisement, they were dodgy guys. At first I didn't realize, but it took them ages to pay me and the other actors. And I remember when we were on set with them, that they were also talking about spinning up their own NDIS provider, because anyone can do it and the margins are massive.
Exactly. There was a Royal Commission, a couple of years ago now, I think, where they had just looked into all of these claims of like legitimately disabled people who were just getting completely abused by their carers, and it was pretty disgusting. And the response to that was to implement all of these recommendations of the commission. Mm-hmm. Now, one of those was that you could just have anyone do NDIS support work without any kind of qualification. And one of the good things that came out of that is that they made it so that you need a qualification in order to be doing this stuff, which in theory should help to root out. It's not going to root out people that have bad intentions, obviously, but it puts some level of resistance between just anyone doing it. It's the same as, like, social media accounts being filled with bots because they're free. Like, if you charge money to use social media, then you're going to have less of a bot problem because it's just too expensive otherwise.
Yeah.
And anyway, now I've been looking into a job with this qualification. Also, it's quite interesting to me that lots of the people who go for this qualification are not very smart. But now that I have the qualification and am looking for it, employers don't actually require the qualification for workers for another couple of years. They're phasing it in super gradually. So you just have to, you know, be kind of working towards it type of thing if you plan on being employed in the industry in about, I think it's 3 years' time now. But employers do not want to employ people currently who have the qualification because it's cheaper to employ people who don't.
Because there's no mandate, there's no requirement.
Right.
Yeah.
And So yeah, you just have, I mean, you still have all of the problems that you would have had previously. It's done nothing to root that out. But yeah, it's just, it's very, there's lots of, if you go and look on Gumtree, there's so many listings of people looking for, I guess you'd call it subcontracting support work. And many times it'll just be someone who has a disability taking advantage of the system to get things done for them that they're perfectly capable of doing themselves.
How does that work, Jordan? Break that one down for me. I'm a little lost.
Well, one of the only things that actually doing the qualification that it taught me, or rather brought to my attention, is that obviously most people have low self-esteem and low self-worth. So can you imagine if you're actually someone who legitimately can't do the basic things for themselves, like tie their shoelaces or prepare a meal, you're probably going to have a pretty low self-worth.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of situations where someone will come in, and because you can achieve a task 10 times faster than the person who legitimately needs help, there's lots of people just doing the task for them so they can get the job done, get out of there, they still get paid the same, it's done. When what really they need to be doing is only doing things that the person who with the disability can't actually do themselves. Like, you just do what they absolutely can't do that's needed to do, and you're more there to guide them and encourage them and get them doing things that they can do so that they actually empower themselves and can feel good about themselves, feel like they're achieving, so they can, you know, grow and progress and be as self-sufficient as they possibly can be.
Yeah, yeah, that's really, really important, man. I hadn't thought deeply about that.
Yeah, and I think there's too many people going into NDIS work now strictly because of the just insane rates that you can get for being virtually unqualified.
Yeah.
And doing not a whole lot. Like I mentioned, it's grouped in with aged care, and because it is basically the same work. It's a different demographic of people potentially that you're supporting with, you know, different reasons why they need their support. But it's just a lot more work being in an aged care facility, basically.
Yeah.
Their role is probably more similar to something like nursing, where you're constantly running around on your feet for, you know, all of your shift in an understaffed environment where you're helping, you know, a ton of people, as opposed to this like subcontracted disability support work where someone will just throw up an ad on Gumtree, have someone come in and get paid way above market rates to support them. Well, not even necessarily support them. They might be relieving stress from the disabled person's family who would otherwise be caring for them, which is all good and well, sure, but there's just too much room for it to be abused with the current system, with the way that it is currently designed. And nobody wants to touch it because nobody wants to be the guy saying we're going to cut funding
it's hard,
to a vulnerable
it?
Population because it's just an unpopular position.
Yeah, we want to maintain a certain standard of care for those who need it, but we don't want to be encouraging fraud or flushing money down the toilet.
Of course, so it just turns into this weird, distorted incentives of just like people doing things for money that is pretty well unproductive on a lot of occasions.
Mm.
And it's going to eventually lead to, like, I don't know if you've seen any charts of, like, do you remember when people used to argue about how the pension was unsustainable because of the amount it was increasing as it compared to the GDP every year?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, if you look at that next to a chart on NDIS spending, the NDIS way outstrips pension payments. So
the growth of these payments year on year is in excess of GDP.
So the proportion of GDP that those payments are is increasing at a rate far increasing the GDP increases, and the NDIS is increasing way faster
than
the pension. spending, yep. which everyone was yep. already worried about.
Yep.
And obviously we've got an aging population where, and it's shifting more that way. We're getting, you know, more and more of people that are elderly in retirement age as opposed to working able-bodied people. And the NDIS is still growing faster than the rate of pension expenditure. So it's obviously unsustainable.
Yeah. So yeah, this is really interesting, Jordan, because I've seen a few articles around the topic of how do you appropriately assess people for their need. And I remember a few years ago, I worked in finance briefly for a care organisation, and they formally would just receive a bucket of money from the government and spend it how they saw fit to most appropriately serve their customers, so that respite care, in-home care and such. And there are a myriad of other organisations doing the same. But yeah, then they were changing to a system, the NDIS system, where NDIS customers, as I understand it, have a certain allowance per period that they can spend on services that they're approved to obtain. Is this correct?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how they allocate funding to people once they're qualified. I assume a large portion of that is support workers and family members advocating on behalf of people that actually need those payments in cases where they're legitimate.
Mm.
So honestly, I think that you'd probably have you'd do a pretty good job of rooting out a lot of the problem if people were self-reporting the need for funding for things. I think that would be a big indicator.
So do you think it's problematic because, let's say, family members and other people get in the way and advocate incorrectly on behalf of people who require care? Is that what we're saying?
That's interesting. That is probably the case in some examples, like I said, of the doctors that were interviewed the other day that said that they were erring on the side of diagnosis for children who may or may not have had disabilities simply because they felt bad for the parents of the children and wanted to put them in a position where they were able to get more funding, even though they weren't sure of a diagnosis. Hmm. But what I'm actually saying is that I think that because the system is designed in a way that incentivizes fraudulent behavior and activity, I think that you will find a lot of the people who genuinely need this support because they're disabled, at the risk of sounding insensitive, like I don't mean to say that they're incapable, but lots of them probably aren't even aware of what's available to them because they have things like learning difficulties and
sure.
they don't understand.
So they need someone to advocate for
exactly.
them.
Yeah. So they don't understand the system that's in place or how, and that's a really broad, you know, insensitive general statement to make. But it is the case that a lot of people, you know, they need help with things because they don't think
yeah.
and don't know the things that the everyday people think and know because they have difficulties in those areas.
Look, mate, I think even if even without a disability, I understand the system's quite
right.
complicated.
It's insanely complicated. And yeah, everyone has only, you know, a very rudimentary understanding of, you know, that they've kind of made from bits and pieces that they hear. So yeah, what my suggestion was that in order to, like, if you wanted to try and start rooting out some of the fraudulent activity that's going on, my assumption would be that lots of people who were self-reporting the need for financial assistance were probably, in a lot of cases, doing so fraudulently.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. And I guess if people know, it's always the case when the government rolls out a big new scheme, there's always people looking for avenues to rort it.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not even just schemes. Like you have a large pile of money with any, like, look at all the money, getting off topic, but look at all the money that you have sitting in superannuation funds. And now there's just like interest groups coming in to see if they can choose how to direct and have those funds invested and the rules around them and things like that. Like what money, large piles of money attracts attention and incentivizes action.
Yeah, man, look, yeah, we are getting off topic, but superannuation, I worked in the superannuation industry, and the superannuation lobby is powerful because the government mandates a certain percentage of our incomes going towards superannuation.
Right.
You don't need to be a good fund manager. You just need customers because your employer is legally obliged to make payments, regular payments to you, and you sit on a big pile of cash, yep. And you just take some fees and a little bit of a percentage,
yep.
Each time period. It's I'm a fan of Cameron Murray, who's an economist who believes that whole industry is a big scam, and I'm now partial to that idea.
Just getting back to the point I raised before about the pension expenditure, like it's obviously not working because obviously if superannuation policy was benefiting or working at all, you'd have a reduction in the amount that the pension was costing taxpayers because people would be sustaining their own retirement. And that's obviously not the case. Or maybe it's the case that the pension rate that people are claiming would be going up even more if people weren't making mandatory or employers weren't making mandatory super contributions. I don't know. I haven't looked into that enough.
It's super interesting, Jordan. I like the idea of a pension system because I think life's hard. Not everyone has a fair shot. And I think by the time you get to old age, I think if you don't have assets or support, I think it's fair that we support old people to live with a roof over their head and food on the table. But I do think some pensioners in our current welfare system, I think some pensioners are better off than perhaps some young people in that if they have a paid off house and we're not taking into account their assets, you can live pretty comfortably on the pension.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think that if you wanted to do any kind of anything to address that, what you'd do is you would address financial literacy in high school. You'd start it, like make it mandatory learning of managing money, because I know that that's not, for some reason, that's not taught to anyone, which is completely absurd since it's probably the main fact whether you're going to have a comfortable or uncomfortable existence.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. There's many pitfalls in life, and if no one teaches you good financial management from an early age, there's no guarantee that you'll automatically figure it out. Especially, things like gambling and all the rest of it. I've had my brush with that. It's appealing. Learning risk management risk management full stop is very, very important.
Could not agree more.
Yeah, and saving on a weekly basis or monthly basis are very important things. I think even implementing good financial personal hygiene and strategies for yourself, I do think there's always going to be some people that cop a bad run, and I'm of the school of thought that believes there should be a system in place to help such people.
Sure. So like I said, it's an issue. Like the NDIS expenditure is an issue that nobody wants to touch because they don't want to be the person saying that they're going to, cut funding and potentially put the most vulnerable people in a worse off situation.
Yeah.
So what do you think could possibly be done in order to try and rein in the fraudulent financing and make it so that people who actually need the services are the ones getting them?
That's an excellent question, Jordan. Immediately, I remember a few years ago when I was first looking at the schedule of rates for different people under the NDIS. So you'd have like support worker, occupational therapist, allied health, psychologist or whatever. These rates are insane. Like they're multiples of rates that I would understand just in the free market. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's also the case that if you're offering any product or service and it's catered towards people with a disability, that you get a much higher rate than you would servicing people.
Because it's more challenging work.
Well, allegedly it is, but I don't think that that's even the case. Because I was looking after someone with a disability and they wanted to, participate in some recreational activity. There's no reason why with, my assistance to help them in whatever they needed help with, you know, based on their particular disability, there's no reason why that has to be any harder for the provider of that service. Now, it's kind of a weird example because I'm struggling to think off the top of my head what a service is that someone could possibly be providing, you know. Like, obviously, it's the case that if, you know, you have a rental property and you want to rent it out to people and you're going to rent it out to someone with a disability, there's things that need to be put into the house potentially to make it so that it's livable for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure, the NDIS can fund that, but they fund it, A, at way higher than
market rates, maybe.
Yeah, to put it in. Yep. And also, the rent that they receive for that property is way higher than market rates, which is ridiculous.
Mm.
Like, it is the case that people with a disability need, you know, maybe they need ramps because they've got a wheelchair or whatever it may be for that rental property. But there's absolutely no reason why people with properties to rent should be incentivized to not provide their rental house for people, or maybe there is.
They're just making it overly attractive to do it through the NDIS.
Now, I suppose that you want to address maybe people think that it's going to be more work, and so you have to incentivize them to go out of their way to rent their property to someone with a disability. But I don't think that that's... Mm. I think that's conflicting the broader cultural consensus that we should be helping people with a disability. So I don't know. I find it hard to believe that the majority, obviously there'd be some, but the majority of people would discriminate on whether they would rent their house out to someone purely based on the fact that they've got a disability.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like it tracks with me.
Yeah.
But maybe it is the case.
Yeah.
But there needs to be a better way to, incentivize people other than just offering them, you know, 3x market rate, like you said, for providing good and service, just because someone has a disability. It's kind of like the opposite of, I don't suppose that's the case actually. But yeah, I don't know how you'd address the problem.
Yeah, I think surely there were problems in the previous iteration of how things were done, where the government would directly give money to providers and then the providers would find the best services they could to help their clients. So I guess in that sense, it was the responsibility of the provider to get the best value by integrating with the market and market rates for whatever services. Yeah.
What do you think? Because the point of, the NDIS, if they had like a mission statement or whatever, their goal is to A, improve the quality of life of people with a disability, and B, to make them be able to live a life that is as similar as possible to able-bodied people, right?
Yeah.
So based on that, what do you think about their old practice, which is definitely the case that it occurred, of funding people with a disability to go and see sex workers?
Mate, that is super interesting.
That's
super
a hot topic.
It is a hot topic, man. And not just that, I know up until recently, perhaps still, even like Reiki stuff, man, like getting the magic crystals on you, like funded through the NDIS, like that's fraudulent in my view.
I think so too. Like it's one thing to be trying to improve people's quality of life, but you'd never give someone on JobSeeker money to go and see a sex work. Like, it's completely absurd.
Well, that you've got to be consistent, right? So if it's fair for people with a disability to have access to sex workers, well, then you've got to provide that access to other people who might want to see a sex worker, right?
Well, the argument is that they're people with a disability are excluded from having access to...
But
to,
so are ugly people.
That's a very good point, and it's exactly true. And it wouldn't even necessarily say ugly people. I would say that, you know, it's pretty common. Geez, we're getting really off here.
It's okay.
It's pretty, like, just the way that natural selection and gene propagation works is that the majority of women aim for the best men.
It's true.
And so there's like a whole, you could pretty much say you've got like just mid-level people that are struggling to find women. And if you look at the getting anecdotal again. If you look at the love lives, basically, of young people, very oftentimes a girl has tons of attention from a ton of different boys all the time, and a guy goes a long time with none and maybe has a small bit and then back to none. So it's a good point that you make that, yeah, lots of, that it's not just disabled people that are cut off from sexual endeavours. Yeah. It can be, yeah, a whole wide range of reasons. And this is why this whole equality thing has gone way too far. I heard the argument before that if you want everyone to be equal, people are absolutely biased in all kinds of things, from whether they get jobs or whether they make friends based on how good looking or not good looking that they are. Yeah. And so are we going to go around and make everyone, you know, equally hideous to look at or equally attractive?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Where you have to draw the line somewhere. And so, yeah, I think that the sex work for disabled people, which it's a good thing that they've put a stop to that because it's obviously ridiculous. That is obviously gone too far. But there should never have been a system put in place that allowed that to take place. Like, it's just obvious how open it is to abuse when that kind of thing is the norm to be signed off on, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, there's a line. I think, we want to determine that we provide care along the lines of a safe place to live, you know, healthy food, some social interaction, because that's probably a difficult thing for many people with a disability.
There's lots of community organisations that specifically, like, that's what they do. They provide environments, you know, for people with disabilities to meet and socialise.
Yeah.
And obviously you want people with disabilities to be able to socialise with able-bodied people as well.
Mm.
And so if you can get them out to do those kind of things, yeah, it's good. I would say that the way to start to address this situation in the NDIS and how out of hand it's gotten is probably going to be along the lines of, you would look at, because people that need care, obviously they have family stepping in and stepping away from work that are providing care. And so I think if you started giving people funding on the basis of, you know, their family members who aren't able to look after them or, sorry, have stopped working to look after them, then they're probably going to be eligible for some funding to relieve the family pressure on looking after that person. I think that'd probably be a good start. But, yeah, how you actually address the problem of cutting down all of the nonsense with it.
I think it's so hard, man, because if we think just about ourselves as able-bodied people, as you say, like, what are our needs, right? Because I think you can, depending on your greed or ambition, you can really make the claim that we all have infinite needs, right? So unfortunately, we have to draw the line somewhere, right?
Like, sure. And you can go completely the other way as well and say that the basic needs of people are not even being met. Like, there's so many people who can't own homes anymore.
Yes.
So are they automatically going to get funding or housing? Like, it doesn't look like it. And it seems odd to me, again, not a politically popular opinion, but it seems odd to me that at the cost of working, able-bodied people, productive people in society, we're going to go and fund an unsustainable amount of unproductive people, which is not a nice way to categorise them. Sure, there's things that they can do. Sure, there's things that they can't do. But
we've got to make sure it's a fair society, that disabled people get good quality care that's not in a system where we're being wasteful. It needs to be efficient. But as you say, we can't allocate the entirety of our GDP towards it. I know that's not happening. I'm not saying it is, but we need to find it.
It's on track,
a middle ground. Yeah, so something will give, obviously, because
it has to. And unfortunately, I think what that's going to be is just going to be a complete scrap of care for people that do. They're going to be the ones that miss out when this turns sour.
People that have a legitimate requirement for care will miss out.
Yep. It's going to get so out of control because it's just spiraling and no one will touch it, that eventually the popular position is going to be, right, we just need to scrap it entirely.
Yep.
Because it's too hard, like you said, to differentiate between.
Yeah. What about this for an idea, Jordan? So what if we just simplified the system? Because currently I think the job seeker payments, I think they're not enough to live off. I think the quantity of money that you get on those things don't help people get a leg up towards a good education, good housing, and bettering their lives. I think that's too low.
I agree with that, but I'm in two minds about it. Like with the whole AI era that's coming, I did initially think that like a universal basic income system was going to probably have to be the way to go. But it is also the case that if you give people money for free, that they don't necessarily do anything.
Yeah, it's got to be a two-way exchange, doesn't it? Like we want people to be productive and to engage in society and to do something that gives back, whatever that is.
Yeah, or just engage in society in a way that's meaningful, I suppose, to society.
Yeah. Mm.
Net benefit to society. Yeah.
And the exchange of money is often a reflection of that, but it's distorted.
Yeah.
Right? Because we could probably say there are some billionaires in the world, like, I don't know, the guy that owns Louis Vuitton or whatever. Could we really say that he's delivered $250 billion worth of value to planet Earth? I'd argue no, right?
Yep.
But it's reflective of our shortcomings as a species, I think. Like in that particular case, we like shiny things. We like having things that other people can't afford. We like to stand out. It's a tough one. It'll be an ongoing problem, I think.
It is really tough, and I just wish more people with a platform would talk about it and address it, because you just got the two extremes at the moment.
Yes.
You've got people with, you know, that are disabled and that are minorly disabled, I would say, just yelling and advocating for it, as well as the people who, you know someone disabled, agreeing with that position being the loudest. Mm. And you got the people who think the whole thing is just terrible. And there's no like central or centrist, reasonable debate going on about the topic. It's just one thing or the other, which I suppose is the case with any matter that's political.
Yeah, mate, that's really, really important.
We need more nuanced discussions that are potentially, you know, issues that people do not like. Uncomfortable discussions about nuanced, controversial topics.
I really agree, Jordan. I really like the idea of having such discussions where different ideas can be thrown around without people getting emotionally invested and having to be aggressive or confrontational. We truly can have different ideas.
Yeah, I think cancel culture has done us absolutely no favours, because people, you know, with things to lose are scared. They might have really, you know, specific, important, contextual knowledge on a topic, are scared to speak out about it because of just the recent societal trend of just shutting people down if they say something that's, you know... Lots of people have legitimate grievances, but they misdirect their anger about them. And it's a big problem. And I don't know how you solve for that.
It's crazy, isn't it, man? The world's changed so much since we've been alive. Do you think that social media in aggregate has just made everyone more extreme, or you think it just amplifies the more extreme ends of content and the political spectrum?
I think it's pretty commonly accepted that the extreme people are the loudest and therefore have the most, the biggest role in like shifting Overton windows around. Because lots of people, unless they're super passionate about a topic, are happy just to not have their say
about
it.
Sit on the sidelines,
You only get the extremists who really have, you know, an agenda that they're fighting for, or a belief that they really strongly have, that are doing all of the conversation. So, yeah, on social media, you do get these really, really polarised discussions. I don't know if it's a net good or bad. I think platforming people who otherwise wouldn't, because, you know, expressing views like that, you either had to be in like a prestigious position, like, you know, as like a journalist or like someone who like owned a company or something to have a platform to be able to say your views. Now, I suppose it's good that everyone can express their views, but then you also have people that shouldn't probably or don't have, you know, the wisest, most informed decisions expressing their views. So I think that part of social media is it's probably a wash, honestly, if it's good or bad. But the other social media, which is people, you know, cherry picking parts of their, like the highlights of their life, their social media profile is a highlight reel of their life. I think that that's undisputably a net bad for society. I think that's just that's been shown so many times over, just to cause like serious mental health issues with young people who, you know, wonder why their life is so hard, not realizing that everyone's life is, well, most people's lives are really, really difficult.
Mostly it's the grey, boring bits, going to work.
Yeah. Unless you're, you know, the top 1%, or, you know, born into like a super wealthy family or something, like, chances are life's probably going to be pretty hard for you. You might be, you know, have a lot of money, it's still pretty hard for you.
Yeah.
Like, everyone has a hard time getting through life, some, if not a lot of the time, for sure. Having said that, I do not agree with banning people from social media just because they're...
This is an interesting one, man. So, because obviously the platforms are, in most cases, privately owned. They're not government infrastructure. So the owners of the platform can sort of determine what voices they amplify, what voices they turn down.
I think there's a lot of that goes on as well.
Oh, so much, man. Like, obviously, yeah. Like Elon buying Twitter and... obviously amping up everything that he says. Everyone has full amplified access to anything he wants to say. And obviously, since it's obviously just so true that whatever the ownership of a social media platform, the political landscape on that platform is going to shift to be in line with
it's the same as anything. If you have a journalist that's trying to objectively report about any topic, obviously, at some level, their personal politics are going to slip into the reporting. So, because you're never going to get a purely objective reporting.
I think there are some who try.
No, absolutely. Some people do try, for sure, but it will slip in on some level. And what I think you're alluding to is the fact that the people who own these platforms or like the algorithm,
they've got ideas.
They do. And whether they mean it or not, personal politics and personal opinions on things are always going to slip into, like you said, the way that algorithms amplify content or whatever else.
Yeah.
It's quite funny that you say that, because I do spend a lot of time on Twitter, and it's very, very funny how my... There's two options in Twitter. One where you can have just like a feed that's customized for you, or one of people that you actually follow. Now, I spend a lot of time on the one of people that I actually follow, because the one that's customized for me is just so political. And I didn't...
You didn't choose that.
No, I didn't choose that. So I think that you're very right to say that they amplify the kind of content they want to amplify. And I think that it's definitely the case, at least with Twitter in my experience, that it amplifies political content. I suppose it's because it gets people the most enraged.
Yeah, man. People respond to stuff that makes them angry.
And they're there
watch it, and they comment on it.
And they want you sitting on the site scrolling around and writing about
getting
shit
angry,
as much
getting
as you can.
Getting fired up.
Exactly. So I think that definitely happens. But, yeah, it's just the... What's that quote? Is it a thermodynamics quote? What's the quote? The purpose of a system is what it does, not what it claims to do. And, yeah, I think that that's very much the case with social media. They say that they're about, you know, connecting people and, you know, platforming all kinds of discussion, but really what they're doing is what they do, which is drive people to extreme views and get them to stay on the site for as long as possible so that they can sell, you know, advertising slots.
Elon Musk is a bit salty about losing some advertisers.
Oh, is he? I don't know. That's a funny topic, because I think that, because I am of the opinion that him buying Twitter is a good thing. Sure, it's definitely got its downsides, but I think that that's objectively better than Twitter prior to him buying it. And I would be interested to what your opinion is on that.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you raised it, John. I think we have different opinions on that, but I might also concede that in the previous ownership of Twitter, there was just a different range of political views that dominated the platform, right? And I understand now, after Elon Musk's ownership, look, I'm kind of a centre-left guy. I understand that from my centre-left echo chamber, people say Twitter's got pretty ugly now. And I understand a lot of left and centre-left people have moved to Blue Sky.
Would you be open to the possibility that I don't think it's disputable that the majority of America, based on the results of their most recent election, has shifted rightwards as opposed to its previously leftwards position, and therefore it's not necessarily amplifying right-wing views, but actually just the majority of views are more right-leaning?
Yeah, maybe it's just reflecting...
I don't know if the demographic of Twitter users is mainly American. I would assume that it is.
Yeah, because I think, I don't know how many users it has now. I think a few years ago, maybe just a few hundred million. Maybe it has similar or more now, I'm not sure. But
yeah, I'm not sure what the actual user numbers are.
But maybe they just appeal more to a different demographic now. Like if we're looking at a Venn diagram or whatever, maybe just some of the circles have shifted a little bit.
And I don't think that would be limited to Twitter users. I think that you would find, as a broad population measure, that is the case, and that's possibly reflected in the views that you see cropping up on Twitter.
Yeah.
But it is also the case that, the algorithm amplifies what the algorithm wants to amplify, definitely.
Yeah, man. I remember in the lead up to this US election, I thought it was going to be close. I thought the Democrats were going to get it. I was very wrong. I can't remember where I was going with that, but
I don't even know why. Why did you think that? They've shown.
I just thought that because I really thought Trump was done and dusted in 2020. I was like, goodbye, catch you later. But he wasn't gone at all. I think for me, it just goes to show. I think Bernie said it right after the election. He said it's no surprise for the Democrats that the people you have abandoned have now abandoned you. I think there's a large swathe of people in America getting paid shitty wages, having shitty healthcare, having a shitty time, a really unfair time, probably pretty sick of the current administration.
Yeah, I'm just kind of surprised because you're a smart guy,
and
as someone who has bet on the last two American presidential elections and picked the winner both times, I thought it was obvious who was going to win in both elections.
Well, the betting markets had it right, but they had it wrong in 2020.
I'm not sure. Well, I picked Biden in 2020 as well, and then I was right. I can't remember what the odds were though. I don't know if I picked it when it was...
A day or two out, it was like...
I think I got,
Biden
I think I got
was
two and a half
bucks.
To one on it.
Yeah, I got in about the same. I was trying to get on at $3, but I couldn't move my...
And I got Trump at 2-1 as well.
Yeah, nice.
Before he went...
If you bet on Trump as in 2020, you'd be retired. In 2020 to win 2024. Like straight after that.
Right.
To me, he just felt so done and dusted.
Right. No, I don't even agree with that. I think it was obvious that he was going to go for a second term just because he's, like, if you looked at the way that he handled, like, any kind of... Because the media in America used to love him when he was just, like, a guy that said you're fired to people.
Yeah.
And
people love a celebrity, man.
They do. And then he became into the presidential role, and then all of a sudden all of these, just... American news outlets just started attacking him like 24/7. I think there's like one American news station that has a right wing or like pro Trump viewpoint. One legacy media, like popular, if you can even call it popular, news station anyway. But a lot of those have come out as being just funded by this USAID thing. It's not even organic.
I'm interested in this topic, and I need to see some facts. I know that the last thing you told me. What did you tell me? You told me something. You told me USAID had been funding ISIS and Al Qaeda
and the Taliban. Yeah.
I googled it. I couldn't find any support for that. But if it's true, I want to know. If it's true, I think that's a very big story.
I don't even think it's surprising. I think that it makes complete sense. Like even if you, like just, oh, how do I say it? I don't know, there's just been, if you've been following a lot of the things, a lot of the spending that they've uncovered, I guess you can, on some of the things, make the argument that it's politically motivated. But the reason that it has such popular support in America, and it does have really popular support, like, A, it's what people voted for. That was one of the big policies that they ran on the election with. and people did want this. And I think that what Elon and his team have done with their fighting government waste thing is that they've gone after the most absurd, wasteful, like, spending of taxpayer money that they can find, because they know that they're going to be fought every step of the way on it. And so they needed the public to want it to continue.
Yeah, look, man, a few things. Look, definitely that's the story they're telling. I'm not sure I believe it. I mean, as I said, Trump is a very well-established liar. You wouldn't disagree with that, would you?
No, I don't think he's established. I think that he's definitely a massively self-interested person, sure. But I know it might sound naive, but I really do think that he wants to help people this time
around.
You reckon
Trump wants to help the little guy this time? But he hasn't today.
I honestly do. There's a lot of examples of him being a dickhead, definitely. But there's also a lot of examples of him interacting with people that are, like, you know, far below his status or whatever, just like regular working class people. And he interacts with them in, like, a humble and nice way, but usually only if they're male.
Yeah. Musk is another worry for me. Musk is a very capable human being, one of the more capable human beings on planet Earth, I think. But I'm not sure that everything that comes out of his mouth is the truth. I do believe he thinks he's doing God's work. I do believe he thinks he is fighting the bad guy and making things better for everyone.
But don't you think that it's funny, though, that every single, like, opinion that's attacking what he's doing has been completely silent on, like, all of the billionaires, and there were more billionaires that funded Kamala's campaign than there were that funded Trump's.
I heard she got a bunch of funding.
She did.
She didn't fail for lack of funding. Yeah.
So there were way more billionaires that were supporting, like, Democratic causes and Kamala's campaign, but no one has any issue with that. It's just Elon that they have a problem with. Like, I think the whole thing is very motivated and not at all unbiased, objective assessments of things.
So hang on. So you're saying the Dems and their backers hate Elon unfairly? Is that what we're saying?
I think that it's just one of those cases, which is just a common thing that people do on the internet, really, where they're just picking whatever angle that they can to launch an attack. It's not actually a position that they think is tenable.
Anyway, they hate Elon for other stuff he's done, and they're going after him on
for
this.
For whatever that they can, yeah. And that's not a one-sided thing that happens towards Elon. That's what everyone on the internet seems to do. They just, like I said, this whole cancel culture thing. People just attack what they think is attackable. But, yeah, like, it's not the actual position itself that's untenable, because if it was, they would have things to say themselves when they find people on their team doing the same thing.
Yeah, I think you've touched on something that's a real problem, Jordan. Politics is dirty, and unfortunately it's dirty on both sides. I'm a centre-left guy, but on most topics I'm centre-left, not all. But in Australia I've been very disappointed with the Labor Party. And similarly, I'm disappointed with the Democrats in the States. Like, it's not like they have a lot more integrity than the Republicans. I think they have a little more, but not a lot more.
I think in my first time I voted Labor. The second time I voted Independence, but then still preferenced Labor above Liberals. And I definitely won't be doing that in the election this year. It'll be all Independence, which is same as last year, but then Liberal first, because I just can't cop. But if I could vote for neither major party, that's what I'd be doing.
Yeah, I think the way to vote for neither is just to vote Independence.
Yeah. But too many people don't understand the preferential voting system, and it makes me want to tear my hair out.
Jordan, this is funny. We've got 4 minutes left, so maybe we'll start wrapping up. But if you want to have another conversation another time on preferential voting or the upcoming election, I'd be very interested in that.
I would love to have a conversation about not just on preferential voting. I think that's a short topic, but the more people that learn how that works, the better. Although I think that anyone who's looking up and listening to a podcast that has anything to do with politics probably isn't someone that you need to worry about understanding. Like, they probably know what preferential voting, how it works.
Oh, look, yeah, you'd like to think so. I mean,
But I daily, in my highly political Twitter feed, I daily see people who make some comment that just outs them as not understanding preferential voting. And it's really alarming. Again, something that's not taught in schools, why not?
Excellent point, Jordan. Well, I think we obviously do need to have another conversation on it. yeah, I think you're right. I think they do need to teach it more in schools.
But it's good. More conversations like this, getting people thinking about things that they probably just lightly thought about. Like, yeah, helping disabled people is good.
Yeah.
And the NDIS is bad when it's kind of like a nuanced in-between.
Yeah. Look, man, I'm hoping to speak to an audience that may exist in the future that's reasonably broad, just people with an interest in society, politics, what's fair. And obviously, I have environmental concerns as well, so...
You know, it's good. I never cared about this stuff, and I'm glad that I do now because it's good. It's important. More people need to care about it.
Thanks for your time, Jordan. I appreciate it.
Thank you.